Season preview edition of the Padres Collective. John Schaefer, Kevin Acey, Matt Devine with you for the next hour. It is here Thursday afternoon. Padres and Tigers, again from downtown at Petco Park. So we're going to talk all about it, projections for team MVP. We'll take a look at the National League. We'll talk about some of the recent reporting from Kevin in the Union Tribune as well. But as you make your way in, you have to subscribe to this channel with the season now here. If you have not yet subscribed to this channel, please do that for us. We will have year-round weekly Padres content for you. So if you haven't subscribed, please do that. We're available on audio platforms as well. The podcast will be available after this episode on most major podcast platforms, including the iHeartRadio app, iTunes, and Spotify. And Kevin, I talked to you on Monday. This is funny, man. I don't know if you heard this. And Kevin, he told me on multiple occasions on Monday, he's like, I am getting out of Peoria, like a bat out of hell. I'm getting out of Peoria as quickly as possible. I think you said you spent 42 consecutive days. Well, you were in Miami, but you spent 42 days essentially in Peoria. So you're back in San Diego. Among all the people that cover it or consume it, you must most look forward to opening day because you spend so much damn time in Peoria.
It occurred to me because I was so elated, and it was just, it's one of those days, those last couple of days of spring are when you just, I don't know, you feel so appreciative of this great job you have. And it occurs to you, like, you know what the end of spring training means? The beginning of 6 months of a grind.
This job is a silly, silly joke of a job. I follow baseball writers around, or follow baseball players around, and I talk about baseball and write it, and I get to, you know, be on baseball fields and beautiful ballparks. So yeah, I'm so fired up for this time of year.
Matt, you're fired up. I know you're fired up.
If you know me, yeah, no.
When is he not?
I'm very excited, man. It's always fun, right? My fiance and I always, I think I mentioned it in the last show, but we always watch Fever Pitch, the movie with Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore. So we watched that last night. So that's when I really know. I was smiling the whole movie because I was like, oh, it's here. Padres season's here. Obviously, there's some question marks with the team, but going into this season, man, what better than, you know, Petco Park, a great fan base, a great city, and a team that looks to compete, right? It's not like we're watching those 2010, you know, early 2010s Padres. This is a real baseball team, and I'm really excited for the season.
I can't wait. We're going to be down there on Thursday. I don't even know what I'm doing, but I know I'm down there on Thursday. I know Kevin will be covering it. I know Matt's going to be watching it. Let's just react. I mean, here we are. We're inside 48 hours. In terms of like the ceiling floor conversation, I mean, you know, we've all talked about this at length. This has been a long offseason for me. October 2nd was a long time ago. I know they're in the playoffs, but they're out on the second day of October, and it just feels like forever for whatever reason. I look at all the analytics sites, and I see the 79-80 wins. I know the expectations of Padres fans. They've had the back-to-back 90-win seasons. People expect this team to find their way into the postseason. Either of you can start. I kind of look at it in that realm. It's like, listen, I'm not going to completely discount what FanGraphs and others are saying. So maybe a floor for me is kind of what some of these sites are saying. You're in that, you know, 500 year. Maybe it just happens. I still think an upside is something like what we've seen the last 2 years. I'd be surprised if it went beyond that personally for me. So, I mean, we can discuss obviously at length, but for me, it's maybe the floor is what some of these projections are saying, 80, 81 wins. Maybe the ceiling is in the neighborhood of what Mike Schilt did over the last 2 years. And that's kind of where I start the conversation, but curious to see how you guys see it.
Matt, you start because, you know, I really do want to hear it because you struck me when you talked about the 2010s. And that's why I love this show where we've got the, you know, the golden throated radio guy. We got the old man writer, you know, is going to tell you what's happening. And we got the fan, like a really good guy fan. And you suffered through a lot of years. So now that they're contenders, they're going for their first, like their first time. This would be the first time that the Padres made the playoffs 3 years in a row if they do that this year. That's incredible. We are in the golden era of Padres baseball. What are your expectations, Matt?
You saying that this is going to be, if they make the playoffs, the first time in franchise history, making it three straight years is an insane stat. I feel like I knew that, but for some reason, hearing that again was like my ears went like this. We are in the golden era, at least in my lifetime. I turned 30 this year, so I've been a fan my entire life. This is the year. Or this has been the most fun I've ever had watching the San Diego Padres. It's just each and every night, Don and Mud in the booth, great reporting, great radio shows, everything around the team right now. If you're on Instagram, every bar and restaurant in San Diego is posting, we have new deals, we have Padres Pint Night. Everyone's all in on the pods. John, kind of on your point, right? I guess you would say floor. I really think if the pitching, starting pitching just goes awry, if Pivetta or King goes down, we could be seeing it might be tough to get to, 82 wins. If we get what I assume we're going to get out of Michael King and Nick Pivetta, and we have one of these Germán Márquez or Walker Buehler types, give us a solid, season of, 15 to 20 starts, 4.24 ERA. I think this team can win a lot of baseball games. I really think it comes down to the stars. We need Tatis. Kevin, I loved your piece. He's in probably the best mindset he's been in a long time as a baseball player. Let's see it. I love hearing it. I love reading it. I want to see it. I want to see home runs. I want to see 2021 Tatis hitting 3 home runs in the first 4 innings against the Arizona Diamondbacks. I want that Tatis. Obviously, I want that Tatis in the right way. I'm very excited for the season. I think we have a lot of talent. Kev, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, I have this habit of saying things and then only certain portions of them are taken and the context is out the window. So I'm very afraid to say what I'm going to say is that this could get really ugly. I mean, and that is if those projections are right in terms of, I think those projections, when you're talking about Fangraphs and really anybody who's talking about the floor for this team, they're talking about the starting rotation. Well, I actually think it could be worse than that if the starting rotation is bad. I think this could be 2021, which, the only reason they ended up winning 78 is they were 17 games over 500 on August 10th. So, if this rotation, and that's because they started out really well, and their rotation they thought was deep at that point. They had Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, Blake Snell. That, if this rotation is not good, if we don't get what is quote-unquote expected, it could get ugly. Now, I have a couple caveats because I also see a high of, 95 wins, something like that. But a new owner coming in most likely sometime in April. And I believe that the first order of business should be, and there are people in the organization that hope it is and believe it can be, that you would then free up the payroll a little bit and let AJ Preller go out and fix whatever, they think needs fixing, which is, by anyone's account, starting pitching depth and a top-end starting pitcher. That's not to say Nick Pivetta is not a top-end. That's not to say Michael King's not a top-end. But champions are not built on ifs, and there's just way too many ifs at this point at the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with what everyone is saying. You know what's funny? I had this conversation today on the radio. Tell me if you guys agree. Oftentimes with sports projections, there's a lot of groupthink. It's like, this guy's saying the projections say 80, Padres fans expect 90. It's going to be somewhere in between. It's like, I haven't seen anyone say this is some 2014 level, this 70 type win season. Like, that seems to be outside the realm of possibility. I also haven't heard anyone say they're winning this division by 3 games and winning 99 games. But, it is baseball. And, last year they started 14-3, and all of a sudden people thought they were winning 99 games. I think there was a general expectation with the fan base when they were 14-3 that they were going to either make noise in the postseason or win the division. Now, they did compete to win that division for a while. They dealt with injuries. Some of it was outside of their control. It ended kind of flat considering the 14-3 start. But I guess my point is, and this is maybe like dodging it a little bit, is like once you get into it, you don't know. Like if it starts well, your expectations change. If you, gosh forbid, start 4-14, you're like, well, what on earth are we looking at? Now, you don't think it's going to continue like that. And you know that there's plenty of time for something like that to change. But I guess everyone seems to be sitting in that, like, I've done it all offseason. I'm like, hey, 87 wins. They'll find a way. That should be good enough. But, like, who knows? I mean, maybe it's a 75-win team because everything goes poorly. Or maybe it's a 99-win team because it's lightning in a bottle, it's baseball, and crazier things have happened. And they actually do vie for a division for the first time in forever. So that's kind of, again, it's hard to know. We're so consumed by it. I would say this about the NCAA tournament. Everyone comes to me, they're like, John, who should I pick? I'm like, why would you come to me? Your snail has just as good of a chance of knowing who's going to win than I do. It's the same thing with this. I mean, we get so close to it that sometimes you are too close to it. And at the end of the day, it's a bat and a ball, and things happen as a result.
Yeah, I really do believe that while I'm not as bullish on them as I was the last 2 years, while people I felt were underselling them, I was like, no, this is a 90 win team. That's not to say that I knew what I was talking about. I just thought I was bullish on the Padres the last 2 years. I'm not as bullish this year. They have too much talent. I do believe their offense is as deep as it has been in a long, long time. That's going into the season. Have there been seasons where they were deeper than we thought? Yes, but going into the season, especially the way Freddie Fermin finished last year and is hitting right now, and I'm not just talking about his batting average, I'm talking about the way he was hitting in spring training, the way Jake Cronenworth played last year and was hitting, where those guys are going to be in the lineup, I think. Ramon Laureano looked much better than his numbers in spring. We can talk later about what maybe some of the stars looked like in the spring. But I really do believe it's a longer lineup. They have too much talent to be terrible. But this, I just wanted to, in my opening remarks, reflect that the starting pitching is more than a question. It's a concern.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I am concerned about the starting pitching. Watching a couple of these starts during, during spring training, there's definitely a few. I mean, Michael King was, it's not like we had a really great spring training out of Michael King, who was injured. Nick Pivetta was solid. I'm not really worried about Nick. Obviously Joe is going to be, on the IL for a little bit. We're already having some of those things pop up. That being said, I do believe in, Ruben and the staff being able to kind of work around it. I know Kevin, we brought it up, and John, on the last few shows about Ryan Burgett and Stephen Kolek, right? How we look at their stats and we're like, man, these guys were awesome. I can't believe we gave away these future, perennial all-stars. Well, majority of their starts, they would get pulled in like the fourth inning with like a runner on second and third. And they'd put in Adrian Morejon, or they put in some crazy Wandy Peralta, and he'd get out of the jam, right? And so you look at his stats and you're like, man, this guy had like a 3.80 ERA. He was amazing. It's like, yeah, but like we didn't really throw him to the wolves in a sense, right? Like we kind of made it so that they had an ideal pitching situation. We could probably do the same thing this year with some of these other guys. Germán Márquez, honestly, I know people, we posted a joke saying, is Germán Márquez the ace of the staff, right, on Twitter? And obviously some people ran with it and were like, are these guys joking? Like, what's wrong with the Padres fan base? It was a joke. That being said, 8 Ks his last two games. There's something there. I mean, 8 strikeouts. Walker Buehler, I don't know about Walker, to be completely honest. It would be a great story if he could give us some starts. Germán Márquez, though, he's going to give up some homers, but if that guy can give me 5 innings and 3 earned and, 8 Ks and just eat some innings. Also, we forget, and we joked about this before the show, right? And Kevin, you were there in Peoria for 41 days. Now you're going to have 162 games of baseball, right? That's so many days. John, you said October 2nd, and it's felt like a long time. Yeah. October 2nd. That is so long from now. And that was the NL wildcard series.
Yeah.
The ebbs and flows of the season are crazy. Myself and a lot of the fan base included need to remember that. I tell myself this on, the March 24th episode of Padres Collective, knowing that May 2nd, I'm probably going to have a freak out, right, about this team. So that's just what being a fan's all about, especially with baseball. But I just am really excited for the season. And I completely understand with both of your points, especially the group thing, John.
It's funny you say that, and then we can get to there's a couple of things I want to get to this point from a loyal viewer of my radio show, and he's been here in the collective at SUPR West, Jeff West, a buddy. He wants to know who we think might be a surprise player. We can get into that when we talk about team MVPs, but I had this same conversation today, Matt, this idea of buckle up. There are no straight lines with the San Diego Padres. It's not going to go the way you expect it to go. I mean, you could start 14-3 and there's still as much adversity as ever. I mean, Kevin has covered this team for a long time now. There's always stuff. You could cover the LA Dodgers. There's stuff. They dealt with a million injuries. Now they win the World Series. I'll take that result. But you know the point. I mean, there's so much that goes into it, and we have no idea what, they're going to lose. They're going to lose or win on Thursday. I talked to Kevin about this on Monday, and people are going to say they just beat Tarik Skubal. This team can win postseason series, or they're going to lose 4-0. And people are going to say, what is wrong with this offense? It needs to be fixed. There's going to be very strong reactions coming out of Thursday, but that's kind of the beauty of baseball. And I have found, Kevin, I'm sure you have felt the same way in your career. It's a moving freaking target. In what I do, talking for 3 or 4 hours, you can have very strong opinions and they can change in 12 hours. And that's what this is. And I'm sure we're going to change a lot of opinions over the course of the next 6 months.
Yeah, real quick. Oh, sorry, Kevin.
No, we just invite ourselves to look foolish by talking about this from day to day. Right. It's, you know, I try to bring perspective and context every single day, but even I lose sight when you're talking about like five losses in six games and they all looked the same. And now you're like identifying what's wrong with this team. And 3 days later, it's all fixed, or vice versa, right? Yeah. And I just spent a lot of time trying to bring sort of, not trying to bring, but I did. I brought expectations down and I was trying to be realistic, but because I don't believe in ifs. But the fact is, AJ Preller is something of an in-season wizard. Ruben Niebla, maybe in 2021, he would have found a way to, you know, make all those bullpen games work. You know, there could be an their rotation could stink, but oh my gosh, for the first time that since the Padres have had a big four, all big four might hit at the same time, and the Padres are suddenly the Dodgers scoring 9 runs a game. We have no idea.
I won't lie. My point before was going to just be, you know, 162 games, right? We're going to have 60 losses and 60 wins no matter what. It's the extra 42 that really matter, right? So remember that when, and I need to remind myself that when I'm freaking out in May, when we, you know, get swept on the road or something like that. So I totally get it. My other point, though, was going to be, you mentioned the four, you know, four big guys hitting, right? Xander Bogaerts had an 111 mile per hour hit off his bat on, I think, the last game of spring or second last game of spring. He's looked pretty solid this spring. I think this might be a sneaky Xander year. John, I know we probably are going to get into it a little later, but
don't go down that path.
I'm really excited for Xander. I think, you know, around mid-June, he kind of turned it on, right? And Xander obviously has had some interesting reactions from the fan base, given how much we're paying him and, you know, his statistics. From all accounts, it seems like he's one of the best people in baseball / on the Padres. And, you know, I'm really rooting for him this year. And if this guy can hit the ball as hard as it looks like he's hitting in spring, similar to Fermin, exit velo doesn't change, right? You don't go from, you know, Peoria to Petco. If you're hitting the ball hard, you're going to hit the ball hard anywhere, right? So I'm really excited for Cezanne and the fellas.
Let's get to this team MVP conversation here on the Padres Collective. Again, this is the season preview edition. If you have not yet subscribed, please take a moment and do that. It takes 2 seconds. Hit that subscribe button and smash the like button for us as well. We've got weekly Padres content for you. All right, let's do this because there's three of us. And Kevin, you can get us started, but let's all choose different MVPs. I mean, I guess we don't have to.
No, we have to.
Yeah, so whoever goes first,
we got to do that.
Yeah, whoever goes first, Kevin, you could choose your team MVP, and then we can react from there. Matt, you can go second, but who do we think? It could be pitcher, hitter, but who makes the biggest difference for the Padres potentially in 2026?
It's such an interesting conversation because last year my team MVP was Adrian Morejon, because I have stats that show that they wouldn't have won 12 games without Adrian Morejon,
right?
And that's just like almost straight line. So anyway, I would love to go some bizarre pick like that again, but guess what I'm going to do? The guy I wrote about Sunday, Fernando Tatis Jr., because that's the easy pick because he's the most talented player on the team. He's the player that they have identified in the offseason. Craig Stammen, everyone, they go around the room and they identify, you know, what guys need to work on and who could do this. And like their number one guy that they need to have be right is Fernando Tatis Jr. That doesn't devalue anyone else on the team. It's just, it kind of makes sense if you think about it, that if Fernando's right, that is good because he is the most talented player. I wrote a long story talking about the way that they have tried to pump him up, get him to believe who he is, to stop stressing out that, you know, being a 6 WAR player isn't enough because he believes he's a 14 WAR player. And, you know, that he can be that 920 OPS guy again, not the 820 guy, which is a fine player. All right. And if he has 820 OPS, but also Manny gets over 800 for the first time in 3 years, and Xander is full season Xander rather than half season Xander, then the Padres will be just fine. And Jackson Merrill's healthy and he's back to being what he was his rookie year. The Padres will be just fine. But my MVP is Fernando Tatis Jr. Because if not now, then when?
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great pick, Kevin. I probably would have picked.
Well, it was the first pick.
You got a good one.
Right.
You know, I'm going to go with another, you know, pick that a lot of people are probably going to be like, oh, wow, you guys really went out of the box here. But Manny Machado, second half of the season was bad. If you look at the stats, he was not a good baseball player second half of the season. Defensively, he regressed last year. Offensively, second half of the season was probably the worst I've seen him as a Padre. And is it room for concern that he's getting older? Is this what the, you know, Manny we're going to get? Is his back getting slower? Is he just kind of getting older as a player as it happens? You know, it's human nature to get older. Manny Machado is under contract for a while. If Manny Machado's contract is going to be looked back at, it's probably going to be looked back at no matter what is, man, we paid Manny a lot when he was getting older. Why not have another one of those, you know, top 10 MVP finishes this year? You know he can have it. Like, I genuinely am never concerned about Manny Machado's baseball ability. But if Manny Machado can give us 25 to 30 home runs and 820 OPS and solid defense, this team makes the playoffs. I genuinely believe that, because when Manny goes, the team goes. I know it's a saying, and I know a lot of people are saying, well, Manny's getting older. No, he is the guy. He is the captain until one of Tatis or Merrill takes it from him. And I don't think that's happening anytime soon. This is one of, you know, Manny's last years of his prime, to be completely honest. And I need to see, you know, I need him to show why one day, hopefully, he gets a statue outside the stadium. So we really need Manny Machado to perform. I believe in him. I think if he has a good season, which he was having a great season for the first, you know, half of the season last year. I'm pretty sure, I apologize if I was wrong, I'm pretty sure he started at third base in the All-Star game for the NL last season. You don't just do that. You don't just like lose the ability to be, you know, a starter one year. And then the second half, he was either injured or just ran out of gas. And sometimes that happens. I mean, when you think about Manny, he's entering his 15th year in professional or in Major League Baseball. That's a lot, man. That's a lot of years. Just had a baby too. I think his kid's probably like 2 years old now. New dad, a lot of stuff going on, building that house. Life happens. But Manny, we need a good year this year, man. If he shows up, I think this team's going to be really good.
Okay. With the third pick. Well, okay. You want to respond to that, Kevin? Because you
did.
I wondered
if we did want to respond. I think we both had little themes. I think Matt's was a lot stronger of, you know, if not now, then when. But I do think that was somewhat hopeful, but absolutely. Like, why would you not believe in Manny Machado until he gives us a reason to not believe in him? Because he has been as horrid as he was, and that was very unlike him. He's a strong finisher. As horrid as he was the final 40 games, I'll say before that, you know, he wasn't great for a period, and he was gassed, and he acknowledged it, and he played way too long. They got in a situation where they weren't doing well, and they needed Manny, or Mike Schilt felt they needed Manny in the lineup, and then September 14th, his first day off, that's criminal. That just should not happen. It won't happen this year. But like, still finished slightly lower, but with about the same numbers as always. So absolutely, Matt, I as hopeful as I felt like that was, where you were like, come on, man, this is going to be 34 on July 6th. It ain't going to get better from here. You also, you picked a guy who absolutely can do what you are asking him to do.
And I love that you knew his birthday too, because that's my mom's birthday. It always makes it easy.
The truth is, if he has a good year, they're good. I mean, it's oversimplifying it. We've talked about it a lot. There's no 2 week stretch where he hits 441 with five homers where they're not good. I mean, there's no 441 13 game stretch where they're going 5-8. They're going 8-5 in those 13 games.
It happened more last year, though. That was weird.
It's so funny. In my head, I'm just like, I won't allow that to
No. I wrote about it for years that, like, there was no player in the major leagues. I mean, yes, of course, when Shohei does well, Dodgers do well. When Joey Votto did well, the Reds did well. Like, that's true of the star players. It's why you pay them. But Manny, more than anyone, and I did the research, for years, when he did well, the Padres did well. It was ridiculous. Yeah. Last year, not so much. But that, hey, whatever. That was 1 year he didn't finish very well. But generally speaking, it's true.
Here's where it's interesting. I didn't fully realize that last year. But again, to, I think, our collective point, no pun intended, if Manny's good,
I think you intended it.
It actually was intended. The truth is, if Manny's good, they're probably good.
Yeah.
Now, we say that. I watched 2021. Wheels fell off. Starting pitching was a big part of that. Manny was good in 2021. Tatis was spectacular, by and large, in 2021. But again, I'll take my chances with Manny being good and the team being good. I spoke today about a specific player in the Padres that I think is capable of this. Who am I speaking of when I say he's capable of hitting 300 with 30 home runs and 100 RBIs?
Jackson Merrill.
Exactly. That to me, like for me, Merrill's ceiling, that's an amazing ceiling. Like if he fell out of bed in that within 5% of that for the next 5 years, as in 5% from 300, you know, from 285 to 315, from 25 to 33 home runs or 27 to 33 and 93 to 107 RBIs. That's a brilliant player, especially with his added skill set, his defense. I know he only stole one base last year, but I don't think he attempted one basically the entire year. He was in and out of the lineup, obviously with hamstring concussion. I mean, you look at his rookie year, it was 290 with 24 home runs and 90 RBIs. He's not that far off from 300 to 3,100. I don't expect exactly that. If he hits 290, amazing. If he hits 29 home runs, amazing. If he drives a 97, amazing. But I do think at some point he is that guy. I think he's fully capable. Obviously, he's already basically been close to that player. Like, sign me up. I don't know if he's the most impactful. I don't know if he is the true leader of the team heading into the year. I don't think he is, but Kevin, you're there. I feel like at the end of the year, if Merrill puts it all together and you're back in the playoffs and he does hit 300 with 30 home runs and 100 RBIs, that face of the franchise conversation becomes interesting because that's a really good year. Not to say others can't do it. Tatis could have a similar year. Machado could have a similar year. But now you're talking about the 23-year-old doing that, and now you're forecasting the next 5, 6, 7 years. This guy's in his 20s. The other players are in their 30s. So I think that's at least possible. I'm not necessarily predicting it, but I think he gets there within like the next 2 years, hopefully. If not, I'd be somewhat disappointed based on what we saw, certainly his rookie year. But that to me is just the potential of Jackson Merrill. And I hope we see him healthy, and I hope we see him on the field 157 times as a 23-year-old, and he can get close to that.
Absolutely. I mean, I write about him in a couple of days. It's actually my opening day story because that's how important that I think he is. And I don't get much into the mechanical stuff or that because, like, I've just learned this time of year, like, either it's going to happen or it's not. And we can talk about the mechanical stuff when it comes through or it doesn't, right? Like, not that it's not interesting because it is interesting. And Jackson knows he's got to chase less and chase, like, bad pitches less. Like, if he just puts half of those swing and misses on terrible pitches, he just waits and he makes contact on a good pitch, his batting average is 20 points higher, 10 points higher, let's say. And he's in the 280s last year, right? So, but to the leadership thing, I want to make it clear, like, the Padres became better partially because, if you remember 2023 and kind of the disaster it was, and I'm not putting this on, I never was, and I never was putting it all on Manny, and no one was ever putting it all on Manny, but a lot was on Manny's shoulders. And the Padres under Mike Schilt, with Joe Musgrove stepping up, Xander Bogaerts stepping up, even Michael King in his first year stepping up, Luis Arraez, they became a leadership council. So that's still the case there, right? Where it's not just all Manny, right? As the dominant force in the room, he's the best player. He's not really a vocal leader, but that's who's our guy. Well, Jackson Merrill is stepping into that role of being the more vocal guy. Guys do want to follow him. I don't want to place too much emphasis on who Jackson Merrill is or is becoming, but the veterans on this team have been talking about exactly what you said for about a year now about Jackson Merrill. This team can be made in Jackson Merrill's image going forward. And that was the Padres' design from the time they drafted him.
Yeah, there's not one player I want, you know, with the bat in his hands in a big spot on our team more than Jackson Merrill at 23. Manny Machado, absolutely not. Fernando Tatis Jr. in a big spot. I love both those guys to death. Jackson Merrill, without a shadow of the doubt, is already showing me he's a more clutch and the guy that I want up in a big spot. I think he will end up, you know, within the next few years being the captain of the team. And it's been fun to see him. I think last year, some injuries, you know, the classic little sophomore slump that even Corbin Carroll, you know, went through. And Corbin Carroll is, in my opinion, one of the better players in all of baseball. It happens, you know, people adjust, all that stuff. I think Jackson Merrill, and it always makes me happy when we do this show and you mentioned, Kevin, about how competitive he is. That's the kind of guy I want being the leader of the team. I want a guy who really hates losing. A guy that likes winning is great. but a guy that hates losing as your captain, that is when real things happen for your team.
Yeah, he is that guy. He was the guy before he was the guy. He's like the way players talk about him, the way that he carries himself, like he's real. And what I love about this, by the way, before we move on or even we continue to talk about Jackson, is all of us, I believe, made compelling arguments for three different guys, right? Mm-hmm. That's a good team. Like everything that was said was like, okay, yeah. And that's like, real. That could be like, I couldn't argue with you. I could argue with you when you said there's nobody you'd want to have the bat in a big situation than Jackson Merrill. Maybe it would be Manny that I'd pick. Maybe it would be Tatis that I would pick. But your point was completely valid. Like, they have good players on this team. Like, and you, as a fan, like, come on. Like, there was a time where, like, it would either have been impossible to pick an MVP of this team, or there would have been just one guy, right? Like, you said, oh, well, it's definitely going to be this guy.
Christian Orpia, baby. You can say
it. It's not going to be Corey Spangenberg, okay?
Number 7 overall pick. Picked him above George Springer. That was a tough one.
Why don't we do that? Let's talk about we're kind of on the spot here because we didn't talk about it. But, and Matt, you can start because Kevin started the last one. But what about like a surprise player? It doesn't have to be like the player. I don't know. Maybe it's just an under the radar type player, or maybe it's just a secondary figure, you know, whether it's a reliever or a bench piece or someone at the back of the rotation. I mean, again, it's like you're going to need a lot more than Manny Machado to win a pennant, or Jackson Merrill. I mean, you could have a team MVP and not have a good team. Look at Mike Trout's prime or Shohei Ohtani before he got to the Dodgers, right? You can have great players without great teams. So who could be like unsung / surprising potentially for the 2026 Padres?
I love this question because, like you mentioned, Kevin, a little earlier, right? We all had three different people for the MVP. I feel like I can name 4 or 5 people for this. And I'm excited to hear both of your answers and the chat's answers too, because I see the chat's popping off, which is great. Always. Thank you all for watching. Freddie Fermin was a huge trade, kind of out of the blue. You know, in July, I was shocked that we traded Ryan Burgett and Stephen Kolek, especially shocked when I saw it was for Freddie Fermin, the backup catcher for the Kansas City Royals, who, I mean, I kind of knew, but mostly because it was funny that his name was very similar to Freddie Freeman. That's honestly the main reason why I knew who Freddie Fermin was. It's kind of a running joke in my fantasy baseball league. Whenever Freddie Freeman did that, you'd kind of make a joke about that. So he comes over, and one thing I loved, I have a friend that's from Kansas City, and I texted him, and I'm like, hey, what's the deal with this backup catcher? It's like fan favorite, right? Everyone loved Freddie Fermin in Kansas City. And I'm like, fan favorite backup catcher. Something isn't adding up. I don't know how you could possibly be a fan favorite when you're a backup catcher. And I look it up. He had a couple walk-off hits when he was a Royal. Salvi had him under his wing. He comes to San Diego. It took him a little while to get adjusted. But, man, something about Freddie Fermin this offseason, every time I would be on Instagram, he was working out. Made me want to work out. I was like, man, Freddie Fermin's putting in that work right now. This is crazy. Spring training, he absolutely crushed. I love this guy. It's been a while. Obviously, Higgy had a great, you know, 2024 where he hit 17, 18 home runs. People forget, first 2 months of the season, Kyle Higashioka was awful. I thought he was going to get DFA'd. Went on a crazy heater over summer, got the bag with the Rangers. We'll always love Higgy. I think Freddie Fermin, pound for pound, is the best catcher we've had in a long time. I think he's going to have a great year. I'm concerned if he goes down, which is what we mentioned last episode. But I could see Freddie Fermin having 12 to 15 home runs, play great defensively behind the plate, and be a huge part of the Padres' success going forward. John, I think you mentioned it last episode. Sometimes it takes a while for a catcher to hit his prime, right, of his career. Luis Campusano, perfect example, right? We're like, hopefully maybe at 27 or 28, he finds it. I think Cal Raleigh found it at 26. Why can't Freddie Fermin have a great year this year? And we look back and we're like, man, 2026, Freddie Fermin, what a killer trade AJ Preller had. I'm really excited to see Freddie Fermin in 2026.
So franchise favorite too. When the Padres played the Royals Like he was like the most popular guy among the players. Scouts were talking about him. I was talking to Padres executives who said Royals executives were talking about him. And it's because of, yes, he was kind of clutch. He played hard, good defensive tools, played more than people knew, like outside of Kansas City, right? And he's just he's like a sunshine guy. He's a good guy. And it's funny you mentioned pound for pound because he also looks like he could be like a prize fighter. Like he's kind of a badass and with a smile. So I like that pick.
What do you think, Kevin?
Does Randy Vasquez qualify or has he been talked about too much for me to say? Like, I mean, we're talking about a guy who had a 3-something ERA last year. He probably was underrated the year before, but here's a guy who, like, they sent him down last year when they got JP Sears. Like at the time I'm like, what a slap in the face this is for what this guy's done for you. But hey, JP Sears was a proven commodity. You trade for him. Okay, fine. Well, Randy comes back, finishes even stronger and starts throwing harder. He comes to spring. He is in fantastic shape. And why is that important? Because last spring he wasn't. And he spent the first, really bad shape. Like he was throwing like 92. So like they had to spend the first couple months getting him in shape. And the guy figured out, hey, maybe I'm not going to strike everybody out here. Maybe I should pitch to contact. Hey, I got really good stuff in the zone. Maybe I can get some more swing and miss on this if I throw it here. And I think Randy Vasquez, because he has answered you don't just say, oh, because this guy had this year and then he was a little better the next year. Oh, he's automatically going to be better the third year. No, no. It's about that they have just kept Randy Vasquez down. And he has answered every time. And I think that's a good trait. So I'm going to pick Randy Vasquez, but like you, Matt, I could have picked 3 or 4 or 5 other guys.
I'm going to go with, I don't know if surprise, he was a surprise last year and I'm looking for even more. And that's Gavin Sheets, where like it was surprising basically off the scrap heap to get that level of productivity from a player. And I think he's capable of maybe even more, second year mm-hmm. in the organization based on what he accomplished last year. He played a lot, and I expect him, and Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, I expect him to play a lot again in 2026. He possesses something that they collectively lack, which is just slug. I mean, they all have the potential. We've talked all about it, but Tatis, Machado, Mayer, but you're going to need it everywhere. Laureano, Sheets, you're going to need it 1 through 9, because they're never going to be the team that has one guy just run into 49 balls. They're more the team that you'd love to see 7 guys hit 20 as opposed to one guy hit 48. I think they're more capable of being that team. And I would love to see Gavin Sheets be that player. Fan favorite, we all know. Capable player, certainly not an old player, and just taking advantage of an opportunity. So I feel like what we saw last year is funny because we talked about the end result. The end result, I think, was a very good year. I mean, I think he certainly fulfilled expectations last year. If he's even better this year, which I think he's fully capable of being, nice spring again for whatever it's worth, but I think it's always a positive as opposed to the opposite of it. So I'm just I'm hopeful and optimistic that Gavin Sheets can have even a more productive 2026, which to me, again, considering their needs and 28th in home run and 28th in baseball and home runs last year, like, yeah, you could use that nice year from Gavin Sheets, I think, if you're Craig Stammen and the Padres.
I think there's a lot of promise in that first base, platoon.
Yeah,
because I
whatever
could have
they
picked
do with
Nick,
it. Yep.
I could have picked Nick Castellanos as well, who got better at first base, but more importantly, his at bats were good. I don't know when Nick Castellanos is going to fall off a cliff. I don't know, right? Like, but I'm telling you, the guy came in and he looked pretty good. So, but Gavin Sheets is far and away their best defensive first baseman, though you do have Ty France there now too, and he's made himself into a nice first baseman. But what I saw, Gavin Sheets, and we watched him make himself into a left fielder last year. He basically, he worked at first base, but that was not his primary focus. He got back to being a first baseman. He wants to be a gold glover, and he was really good this spring. And I watched a lot of drills too. So like, I'm not just basing it on what in games, like he's really good there. And you're right. Like no swing changes this year, which he had last year. And so he, quite honestly should be better this year, right? Like if he's that player that he wants to be, he should be better this year. I like that pick.
Yeah, ball sounds different off of our guy Derry Bond's back.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly. And, and I loved your point, John, right? He's got pop. Another guy that I think we haven't brought up today, and kind of I think he's going to, and I'm very happy with my Fermin pick, but my 1B would have been my guy Miguel Andujar. Mm. The dude rakes against left-handed pitching. In spring training, I feel like every time a lefty was on the mound, he was hitting a ball hard or over the fence. We didn't have that last year. He might not start every game. So yeah. If you have a guy like Gavin Sheets, so let's say we're facing Tarek Skubal on Thursday, right? And one of, Sheets doesn't start for whatever reason. And mm-hmm. So you now have a guy off the bench who can hit any reliever, right-handed reliever, right? Runner on second and third, two outs. We're not putting in some scrub. We're putting in a real MLB player. We didn't have that last year. The depth wasn't there. Miguel Andujar coming in to face, Tanner Scott when we're playing the Dodgers. That's a real, real batter. Like, that's a guy that can get you a big knock in a big spot. So I could see him having, and me and my brother joke on the podcast that we always say, anytime someone comes up, we say, oh man, he could be like 2024 Donovan Solano, or he could be like 2024 David Peralta when we're saying something good, right? But I do believe Miguel Andujar, that there's some real pop in that bat. 1,000 back-to-back 1,000 OPS seasons against left-handed pitchers is not a joke. So I'm really excited to see him pitch or play this year.
You just reminded me of something. Can we each make a bold prediction about anything? Because I have one on the top of my head from someone commenting in the chat, and you could go anywhere with it. It could, like, here, let me start, and then you can follow suit if you want. Here's my bold prediction, and I want to hear if you guys agree or disagree. There is no chance in hell, in my opinion, Ethan Salas is in the major leagues in 2026. Zip, zero, zilch for me. 10 games last year, wasted season. Great, great spring breakout game. Congratulations. Amazing. And it's good. It's encouraging. Let this kid develop. I don't care if he hits 394. Those should be nice. Again, also no real pun intended, but 394 would be pretty cool. They could have another beer if that happens in AA San Antonio. I don't care what he does. I hope he hits 30 home runs. I hope he hits 388. I hope he drives in 110 and throws out 56% of would-be base stealers in AA. I would just leave him at a level and let him develop and look up in September and say, awesome year, man. You've put yourself in a position where you can help us at some point sooner rather than later. That's what I would do. And everyone's been asking me on social media for return the show. Oh, he had a great game. He's going to be up at some point this year, right? I'm like, no, why would he? He's 19. I mean, like we've been talking about, catchers are good in their 20s. That's my bold prediction. I would tend to think you guys would agree with that, right?
Couldn't agree more.
I think it's fair for people to go ahead, Matt.
No, Kevin, you're good. I'll finish it up.
Fair for people to bring it up because of your uncertainty about Camposano, right? But you got, like, what you said is correct, and I believe the Padres have reached that point too. They put a lot on the young guys that they think can develop fast, right? And not every one of them is Tatis or Merrill, right? And then there have been injuries with Salas. So, yes, I believe absolutely, and I believe the Padres believe what you're saying, John. And then he would have to do really well, Camposano, or there would have to be like injuries for me and Camposano. And then what about Blake Hunt and Rodolfo Duran, who are there and who they actually do think are pretty good. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Kevin and John. My goal for Ethan Salas, play this season, man. And let's see what we got, right? If instead of hoping that he plays in the major leagues, how about we hope he gets some sort of his prospect pedigree back that he lost? He went from a consensus, this guy's going to be Yadier Molina that can hit, to this guy can't hit at all, and he might be, Austin Hedges with a worse bat is his what people were saying about him, and he's only 19 years old. So instead of worrying about him, playing at Petco Park this year, let's just see him have a decent season in the minors, play a healthy season. Obviously, defensively, he's fantastic already, and everybody says that he could already be a catcher on that side of the baseball field in the major leagues, which is awesome. But unfortunately, you got to also hit. That's a real thing. So I'm really excited to see him at least. And Kevin, I know I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, and I agree to an extent. If there's one position that you don't have to hit as much, it's probably being if you're a great defensive catcher. But if you're 19, only played 10 games last year, it's hard for me to believe that you're going to I honestly don't think he comes up until he's 21 unless he just lights the world on fire this year. And there's
They don't put reins on guys. I think you're probably right, Matt, but like they wouldn't stop him if he had a great year. He's got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And I mean this very much. Like, I marvel at the guys who keep track of the minor leagues, who devote their entire vocation or whatever to hunting the prospects. But man, it just gets a little silly sometimes. And it got a little silly about Ethan Salas.
That makes me feel good, actually, hearing that from you. Because I did see, I feel like, and sorry, John, for cutting you off. I apologize.
No, you're good. I mean, it's a fair point.
It's interesting. Ethan Salas went from, our prized possession to, nothing. Nobody wants to deal with this guy anymore in the prospect land or on Twitter. When I think he's probably, maybe he's not going to be, Yadier Molina, but I think he's going to be he could still be a pretty solid, And when I say Yadier Molina, maybe he's not going to be a Hall of Famer, right? Which is like,
maybe he will be Yadier Molina just 2 years later.
Yeah, exactly.
He could not take his first at bat in the major leagues until 24 and still be a Hall of Famer, or he could never appear in the major leagues. That's the craziness of this sport. I mean, we know he's not a drafted player. These guys have been picked first overall that have done literally nothing, if even made it. And some have not. I worked in the minor leagues for 15 years. I remember that when I was with the Pirates, they drafted guys first overall that had maybe a cup of coffee in the major leagues. Brian Bullington was a pitcher, maybe out of Ball State. He had arm injuries. There's so many examples where it's like you could be the top prospect in baseball and then completely flame out, or you could be a 24th round draft pick and have a long and productive career. By the way, it's a good point. Someone said bold prediction. John makes a very non-bold prediction. It wasn't bold. But if you have a strong statement you want to make, it wasn't bold. I mean, there's no world where Ethan Salas should be in the major leagues in 2026. But if you guys have something, you go anywhere with it. I guarantee the Padres will win a playoff series, or Joe Musgrove is going to throw 100 innings. But whatever you want.
I got a quick one. I think bold prediction. April, we get the owner. I think the first move the new owner makes is extend Adrian Morejon 5 years, $70 million. I think that's the first move that our new owner makes. I know it's bold, and that's why I wanted to see, hopefully the chat doesn't give me too much grief, but I love Adrian Morejon. I think he's extremely valuable. Having Adrian Morejon and Mason Miller for the next 3 years would be extremely valuable. It's not like Adrian Morejon. It's not like we're paying, Wandy Peralta this contract. He's 27, 28 years old. You get his entire career. One awesome thing about Adrian Morejon too, he's a true Padre, man. Sign him out of Cuba in that huge international free agent signing class. He's been up and down. He's been hurt. He's been a starter. He's been in El Paso. Is he a bust? Is he this or that? He finds his role. From all accounts, Ruben's like a second father to him. He wants to be a San Diego guy. You could tell with his social media presence and how the Padres interact with him on social media, he's the kind of guy you root for. He's a fan favorite. So I think the easiest way for whoever the new owner to be to instantly get in the good graces is extend a guy like that. Because it's not like you're extending some scrub. You're extending one of the best relievers in baseball who wants to be a San Diego Padre. So that's my hot take.
I love Adrian Morejon for all the reasons that you said. He's just a great kid, man. He's going to be a free agent next year. I haven't talked to Adrian about it, but I think he'd scoff at that deal. I think he wants to be a Padre, but I think that, like, Adrian Morejon, let's say he puts together another year like he did last year, like, he's somebody's closer.
Yeah.
If Adrian Morejon said he was going to take 5 and 70, he's going to be 27, I think, or he just turned 27.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, that he's 27 years old. He is on his way to being the best left-handed reliever in baseball. You could argue that he is now. He's probably not, but he's on his way. Love that. You mentioned Joe Musgrove, so I won't go there because I was going to say 120 innings just because I believe very strongly in Joe, even though right now there's just no way to tell. But I believe very strongly in Joe. But no, my bold prediction is that Mason Miller goes 40 for 40 in saves.
Ooh, love that.
I realize how ridiculous that is. I do.
It's doable.
He's just nasty. That slider, I mean, and, you know, obviously the velocity goes without saying. I think, yeah. So I decided to go 40 for 40, not 30 for 30 or 32 for 32. I went 40 for 40.
If like he goes pushes 40 for 40,
reliever Cy Young vibes.
Real quick, if he goes 40 for 40, I think my first reaction is going to say, why did he only close 40 games? Potentially. Right, like, that's the one. I had this conversation earlier in the week, actually, on the radio that, you know, he's never thrown more than 60 appearances. He's never had more than 60 appearances. Now he's had a short career. He had rookie year, then two full years, basically. He's never been a good team until the last 2 months, right, of last year. But look at how the Padres were using relievers last year, Kevin. I think some guys were on pace to throw more than 80 games. I don't know who led them, but Jason Adam had an injury. Mm-hmm. I'd have to look, right? But they had some guys pushing it in terms of games, or appearances. But he's under contract multiple years. How willing will they be? Again, typically closers, at some point you're going to go three straight or four in five. That's mm-hmm. basically what you're asking a closer to do at some point. But, and obviously in the postseason, although there's more built-in off days, how many appearances would he make? If he's just dominant,
They have Adrian. You're going to have Jason Adam, right? Let's say Estrada takes a step. Take a look at Estrada's numbers minus the Dodgers in Coors Field last year. Yeah. Like, I mean, Estrada, Bradley Rodriguez, Morgan, they struggled a little bit with their command. Their numbers were great in the spring, but you know, they've got some work to do. But they have such a construction and they're going to lean on that bullpen so heavily. I really do think they're going to and this is a silly thing to say because they always are going to, and especially Ruben Niebla has been great at it. Mike Schilt was great at it. Craig Stammen, a former reliever, is going to be great at it. They're going to be very careful with these relievers and in particular their high leverage arms.
Yeah, as they should be. I mean, there's no other option. I mean, the other side of that is very problematic.
It's not going to be 21 again. Craig Stammen, not that it would be anyway, but Craig Stammen was a part of 2021. When anyone who followed the team knew, I didn't know it was going to crater, but anyone who followed the team that when they were 10 games or 17 games over 500 on August 10th knew that they were in trouble. I mean, Craig Stammen said it the other day, and he was only slightly exaggerating. He was in the rotation and available the other 4 days. he was open, meaning he was opening. They were doing 2-3 bullpen games a week. You remember who was pitching for them at the end of the year. Well, Jake Arrieta didn't make it, but Vince Velasquez. it was just a cast of characters. Craig Stammen is going to, I think, and the consensus from other managers and people in baseball, he's going to do a fantastic job with his bullpen.
I was at a Jake Arrieta startup in the Bay. That was that was a tough one to walk out with Padres gear on, because that was the year that 2021, the super fluke Giants year, where somehow all of their batters hit 25 home runs, and now Brandon Crawford
won like 100.
All these guys,
seven games
next year, they're out of baseball. Something was up.
Yeah. And what was the Padres? We can move on to who we think are the real threats of the National League for a handful of minutes. But what was their worst slide in that 2021 dip? What was it? It was something absurd, right, Kevin? Where they're 4-36.
it was so bad. Awful. It was the fourth worst. I've written it so many times, I can't believe I can't remember it. It was fourth worst collapse in history. One of the teams that collapsed worst does not exist anymore. It was like the New York Anteaters in the 1880s or something. It was bad.
Oh man, so I remember, I forget what loss, but we lost, I think we lost to the Cardinals one game, and that was the game that ended it. And I just remember walking around. What did you say, John?
The Manny and Totti fight was St. Louis that year. And that's when the Cardinals under Schilt rattled off 20 out of 21 or something.
That was a tough year.
That was a tough year
looking back. But that's like you said earlier, John and Kevin, on this show. That's what you got to love about Padres baseball, man. There's certain teams that you know going into the season. This year, the Angels, it's going to be a tough year, right? The Dodgers, you're going to win a lot of games. There's certain teams where you kind of know what's going on, right? The Pods are fun because you really don't know. It's like watching a show where you don't know the ending. If you know the ending every year, if you're a Dodgers fan and you know we're going to make the playoffs every year, is it really that fun in the regular season? If you're the Angels and you know you're not probably going to make the playoffs, is it really that fun? The Padres, the ebbs and flows. It's what people, that's why people turn into Padres Collective. Make sure to hit a like on the stream. I got you, John. But that's
I hear what you're saying. Subscribe. I hear what you're saying. I think you would have a lot of fun with your, you know, being a Dodger fan. If you, you know, if you try, I know it, you can't even fathom it.
Try it,
because you'd also be extremely obnoxious and wouldn't really follow the team until October. But like, I think it'd be pretty fun to look, you know, every day and go, oh yeah, we won again. And you know, yeah.
I made a joke to my buddies who are Dodgers fans, and I'm like, you know, it must suck that you won the last, like, you know, going into the season, because like anything but winning the World Series is a disappointment. And he's like, no, he's like, it really doesn't suck. He's like,
everyone else can kind of say it sucks.
If we won the World Series this year, it'd be the biggest deal of all time. The Dodgers expect it. And I'm like, does it suck having high expectations? And they literally looked at me and they said, no. So I got it. I learned my lesson there with saying that stuff.
Good segue to the National League. I mean, obviously it starts and ends with LA. I mean, that's not even a conversation. And I think when most people think about the best teams in the sport other than LA, you might be looking at American League teams before you go back to National League teams. Not to say National League teams aren't invested. There are. I mean, Mets, Phillies, Atlanta come to mind. I think the Giants and Diamondbacks could be very similar to San Diego. We'll see if someone emerges in that kind of three-team horse race. I don't even think it's worthy of having the whole division conversation with the Padres. And it's not to discount, like we said earlier. I mean, anything can happen, but that's a conversation for down the road. You look up and you look at the standings. But, I mean, you can't have a National League conversation without it kind of starting and ending with LA, although that's probably a disservice to the Atlantas, the Philadelphias, the New Yorks, the other teams in the West, the Cubs. But I mean, everyone's chasing the same team basically in the National League and Major League Baseball, right?
Right. Or they're not, because you know you're not gonna, you know, finish ahead of them, or you're, you know, whatever. Like, I think that that yes, you do. You there's eight other teams is what I think. I think there's eight other teams for five spots. I think that's what it is. I
gotcha.
You know, whatever. Rockies, Marlins, you know, right. get them out of there. I think probably Pirates, even though they're pitching, and they've got that kind of lightning in a bottle kind of offense, right? Where they, a bunch of guys that, you know, if they step up, right, then like the 2015 Padres or something, like, you know, if they had, you know, captured their former glory, all of them, then maybe they would have been better. But like, that usually doesn't work out. But I think that that's how you also have to judge what your team's chances are, is how good are the other teams in the league? Six teams get playoff spots now. So there's five available playoff spots. And who do you think is going to get them?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. When I look at, you know, when I look at the National League, because we can talk on the AL, but we won't have to worry really about the AL unless we make the World Series, to be completely honest. We'll play a couple games here and there.
We'll get to it later.
Yeah, exactly. Interleague. And I'm always down to talk about, I love baseball in general, so always down to talk about our friends in the American League. But when I talk about the National League, you know, the Dodgers, there's a reason why they have a 30% chance to win the World Series, according to Vegas right now. That's no joke. They are the heavy, heavy favorite. And there's reason
that's
to be.
That's huge in baseball.
Back-to-back World Series champs. They add Kyle Tucker. They add Edwin Diaz. You could be as biased as I am. You could also you can't do a show like this to act like they're not. They are the team to beat. After them, though, and baseball's a fun sport. They were on the ropes many times in 2024 and in 2025. It's not a sport. It's not football. It's not a lot of games. Things happen. I would say the National League right now, I think it's obviously the Rockies are done. Giants, interesting team. Every year it seems like the Giants are predicted above the Padres, even though the Giants are 81-81 every single, or 82-82 every single year. And they might be one or two games up or one or two games below. I watch a lot of Giants baseball, given that I live in San Francisco. I go to a decent amount of games. I'm going tomorrow night. The San Francisco Giants are not some, I feel like their fans talk about them as like some scrappy underdog team. They have four guys making over $100 million. It's not like they're some joke of a team. It's like their fan base sometimes can be very irritating. I know we focus on LA a lot. I don't think they're that good. I think they're an all right team. I think the Padres, if we can get a decent starting rotation, you know, even just mid starting rotation, I think we're above them. Arizona Diamondbacks, I don't know if you guys saw the graphic of their bullpen. It is absolutely awful. It might be one of the worst bullpens I've ever seen. For how bad our starting pitching looks, it looks like great compared to their bullpen. I think Joe Ross is like their eighth inning guy. That's not good. They have no lefties in their bullpen. So I'm not worried about the – I'm not really worried about the Arizona Diamondbacks or the Giants, to be completely honest. I think us and the Giants are going to be kind of neck and neck all season. There's a shot they're better than us, but they're not a team that when we play the Giants, I'm not scared of. There's a couple teams in the NL East that I think are really good. I think the Phillies are on their last year of being really good. I think they're big guys, Schwarber, Harper, Trey Turner. They have a really good rotation, especially if Zach Wheeler can come back. But this is kind of similar, kind of honestly similar to, you know, the Pods with Manny and Xander, except for we have Tatis and Merrill that are on the bottom. The Phillies lineup doesn't have a lot of guys, unless you really think Justin Crawford's going to be, you know, some superstar, which I don't think he's going to be. Outside of the Dodgers, maybe the Mets, Cubs look okay. That's why I'm honestly, I think the Padres, I think we look worse because we're in a division with the Dodgers and we're always playing neck and neck and they're really good. But if we were in the NL Central, is it hard for me to say we're the third best team in baseball? Or in the National League? Sorry,
yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah.
I was like, baseball might be aggressive. But is it crazy to say if we were in a different division, I think people look at us a little better?
But you'd get more games against, you get more games against the Pirates and the Reds. And
right. Well, it's like this is for another day, but it's like one day this will be a 32-team league, the majors, and you'll have four-team divisions, probably like the NFL. And then that becomes a fascinating conversation. What division are the Padres in? I mean, that is kind of a fascinating conversation. Do you want to be in the Dodgers division? All money, you know, their money's green. But then again, the Padres draw now. They don't need the Dodgers to draw. I say back in the day, it's probably advantageous to have the Dodgers and Giants coming in your building. At this point, they draw against, you know, any team. But here's what I got a quick question for you guys before we get out of here. Just in general, the first 12 games are Tigers, and you're talking about Skubal, Valdez, and a very good team, obviously. And then you've got Giants, and it's early, who knows, as we just talked about. Then it's Boston, Pittsburgh on the road. They still have not faced Paul Skeens in his major league career. It feels like inevitably they'll face him at some point. Would you sign up right now for 6-6 out of the gates?
Oh, yeah.
They got some tough pitchers, man. I mean, you're talking about you're going to face Webb after you face I mean, the worst pitcher you're going to face in the first series is Jack Flaherty, who, you know, could shove on you. You're going to see Webb. I don't think you're seeing Ray. You're not going to see Crochet, it doesn't look like, because he's going to get the game before that. But you are going to get Sonny Gray. And the Red Sox have a good rotation.
Really good.
You're going to get Skeens almost certainly because you're going to get the – you're going to get their 10th, 11th, and 12th game. So I think you're going to get him on Tuesday in Pittsburgh. So, 6-6, I think you would sign up for that.
Absolutely. Sign me up right now, John, if we could do 6-6. Because I
– always be worse.
500 ball when you're playing good teams, especially when there's a real chance we're going to be – you know, we won't have the pitching favorable matchup in majority of those games.
True.
You know, even – hey, Nick Pivetta versus Paul Skeens. I'm picking Paul Skeens, right? Like, that's kind of just how it's going to go.
Matchups.
Yeah, matchup-wise.
You mean the guy with the 1.97 ERA over two seasons?
That should have been my hot take. That should have been my hot take. I picked Paul Skeens over Nick Pivetta. 6-6, just stay alive, man. Just stay alive.
Yeah.
Get some reinforcements later. Whenever Daddy Warbucks, whoever the new owner comes in, we'll be rolling.
All right, let's get out of here, guys. Before we get out of here, what's everyone working on? Kevin, you said you're writing a feature piece on Jackson Merrill for opening day.
Yeah, it's pretty much done. You know, we'll see. Yeah, it's for it'll post tomorrow. And then what am I doing? Well, the Padres will let me know.
Yeah, exactly right. That's exactly right. Matt, you're going to the Netflix game.
Giants going to Yankees. The Netflix game. Yes, watch out. Me and my brother are going. I bought us tickets.
That's awesome.
It's pretty close. It's a bike ride away from my office, so we're gonna go there after work. Very excited to, scout. AJ's got me scouting, so I'm going to get to watch our old friend Luis Arraez. Shockingly, I have a feeling he's going to swing at some balls outside of the zone, especially in favorable counts, but we'll see. But no, I'm excited for opening day and excited to be chatting with you guys all season.
All right, and you can catch me on San Diego Sports 760, 2 to 6 p.m. tomorrow. A little special opening day edition. We'll be downtown on the air, live coverage from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll be on the air on Thursday, but typically 2 to 6 in the afternoons on San Diego Sports 760. And as we've been telling you, we're going to be with you throughout the course of this regular season, hopefully postseason as well. So subscribe, all right? Please subscribe to this channel year-round. Padres coverage for you. So make sure to subscribe and smash that like button and find us on audio platforms as well, iTunes, Spotify, and the iHeartRadio app. For Kevin Acey and Matt Devine, I am John Schaefer. Guys, I will catch up with you next week. I forget, when are we catching up, Kevin? Next week, you're going to be on the road,
Thursday,
right?
Thursday when I'm in Boston. That's something we probably should let people know is that, hey, it'd be great if we could do, yep, you know, every single week, same time, same date. Well, Padres play 6 days a week. So
yep,
it's based on their schedule. And unfortunately, I'll take it. It's based on mine. Thursday, I believe, what is that? The 2nd of April. So we'll be right before the Boston series. We'll be able to assess those first two home series.
Let's hope we're having good combos in a week and a half, right, fellas? I hope we're having a fun episode on before we head to Boston.
But yeah, I don't want to start that episode with Padres looking for their first win tonight.
Finger crossed. We'll see.
All right, guys, appreciate y'all and subscribe. We'll see you next week and looking forward to Thursday, and we'll catch up with you next time on the Padres Collective.